Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Okay, let's say for the sake of argument that you have an advanced directive, a medical directive. You have written this so that certain care would be applied in the case that you can't speak for yourself or someone else is going to speak for you, or certain care is going to be withheld. And there are laws about these kind of living wills or advanced directives in every state. In some states, some on the courts are trying to read language not only into their state's constitution, perhaps, but also even into your living will, permitting physician-assisted suicide. Now, that's a big difference between I don't want to be put on a ventilator, a lethal injection, even if self-administered, a lethal dose of some drug, even if self-administered with a physician's assistance, is what many in the medical community think that advance directive might mean for you or for your loved ones. We're going to be talking about a recent assisted suicide ruling by the Montana Supreme Court. Rita Marker joins us on this Monday afternoon here on Issues Etc. She's director of the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide based in Steubenville, Ohio. Rita, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
The Montana Supreme Court has set aside a judge's ruling about a law that's already on the books regarding advanced directives or living wills, and they say, at least that's what the news seems to say, that it is constitutional in Montana for physicians to assist in suicide. Are they reading assisted suicide into that state's constitution?
Actually, no. Let's back up a little bit. First of all, the Montana case came about when a district court judge found that assisted suicide should be permitted in Montana. And the people that had asked for it to be permitted are the people from Compassion and Choices, the former Hemlock Society. They argued that the state constitution's right to privacy and human dignity allow then for assisted suicide. And the judge agreed with them. So the assisted suicide advocates asked the judge to declare assisted suicide a constitutional right, and the district court judge said yes. That was appealed to the Montana Supreme Court. So the court was supposed to decide whether or not to uphold the decision permitting assisted suicide. Now, the whole thing was argued on whether it was permitted as a constitutional right. What the court came up with was saying, well, it's not a constitutional right, but it is permitted in Montana because the Montana Uniform Rights of the Terminal Ill Act, which is the Living Will Act, says that a patient can tell a doctor to remove a ventilator or that they don't want this or that medical treatment. And according to the Montana Supreme Court, gee, that's no different than a doctor writing a prescription for a deadly overdose of drugs. In fact, that it's not even as closely tied to the patient's death in that case as it would be if the doctor removes a ventilator. Because if the doctor writes the prescription, the patient will go and have the prescription filled and the patient will take the deadly overdose. So that was the connection with the living will law. And that's the difference between what the assisted suicide advocates asked for and what they got. Now, to boil it down to something, the assisted suicide advocates said, we want assisted suicide. You know, give us this in a little gift box, tie it up with wrapping paper. And they said, we'd like the wrapping paper to say constitutional right on it. Instead, the court gave them what they wanted, assisted suicide, but they gave them that wrapped in something saying, under the living will law. Now, this doesn't mean that people will write a living will saying, if I can't make decisions, I want euthanasia. But they use that law to justify saying that a doctor won't be prosecuted if the doctor gives the patient the lethal overdose of drugs to take.
So they didn't read it into the Constitution. They read it into already existing law.
Exactly.
I guess I have to wonder whether or not the people who crafted that original law envisioned the court construing it this way.
Well, let me say, some of the people that were involved in crafting those original laws did plan on that. Many years ago, they said that eventually they wanted it to end up this way. But that wasn't what the people who passed these laws had in mind. They were saying, look, people want to be able to say, turn off the ventilator, and if I can't make that decision myself, I want my person I've named to be able to do that. That would be called somebody named as an agent under durable power of attorney for health care, or I want to tell my doctor that so that if that happens, this would be the case. But no, they didn't envision that, and no one envisioned the fact that this would mean that doctors can give patients a prescription for poison. Now, back in 97, the same people, the same assisted suicide activists, a group called Compassion and Choices that used to be named the Hemlock Society, brought a couple of cases before the U.S. Supreme Court, and they tried to argue it that way, saying it's no different for a doctor to give a patient a lethal overdose of drugs, although they just said medication to end one's life with dignity, you know, all that verbal engineering. But they said that's no different than removing a ventilator and so forth. And the U.S. Supreme Court, in a unanimous decision, said, oh, hold the phone. In fact, that's entirely different. And it is, because you know what battery is. If somebody hits you, that's battery. If somebody touches you in a way you don't want them to touch you, that's battery. And so if a doctor does something to a patient that the patient doesn't want, that's battery. A patient has the right to say, hands off my body. You can't give me that injection. You can't give me that treatment if I don't want it. That's really, really, really different than saying, give me a deadly overdose of sleeping pills so I can kill myself. And the U.S. Supreme Court acknowledged that. However, this is the Montana Court, the Montana Supreme Court, and it's based entirely on Montana law. And so this is the law now in Montana, that a doctor can prescribe a deadly overdose of drugs for a patient knowingly, knowing that the patient is going to use them for assisted suicide. And the so-called restrictions are really interesting. If it's a terminally ill patient, now in Montana, terminally ill is somebody that has been diagnosed by either one doctor or a nurse practitioner as having an incurable or irreversible condition that even with treatment will cause death in a relatively short time. So that if somebody is on dialysis or somebody is even, like many people are diabetic, they'll keep taking their insulin, but generally their condition will cause death sooner than it would have if they didn't have it. So it all depends on how you interpret relatively short time. You know, at my age, I consider relatively short time to be 5 or 10 years, but my grandchildren consider it to be 5 or 10 minutes. So there's really no definition of that. So technically speaking, if you decide tomorrow that you're going to fly into Montana and you're going to find a nurse practitioner or a doctor that will say, yeah, you have a condition that will cause your death in a relatively short time, you could then have the doctor write a prescription. It would be totally legal. You could take that and be dead the next day.
Rita, one of your colleagues, Wesley Smith, has written late last week that this essentially takes physician-assisted suicide and slides it over into the category of legitimate medical treatment. Is it?
Well, that's exactly what has been done already in Oregon and in Washington. And in fact, when those states passed their Death with Dignity Acts, that transformed the crime of assisted suicide into a medical treatment, and that's exactly what it is here. There's another way that they refer to this. They call it an end-of-life choice. And so it has become such that in Washington State, for example, and in Oregon, patients are supposed to be offered all options. There was a training session last summer for crisis and hostage negotiators up in western Washington. These are the trained law enforcement officials that respond to calls from somebody saying, my mother, my child is trying to commit suicide, please come. And the social worker that was conducting that training session, after talking to the hostage and crisis negotiator, said, now, she explained all the possible reasons that might lead someone to this, and then she said, but also we have to know there's another option, that in Washington there is assisted suicide. So technically speaking, if that crisis or hostage negotiator gets there and the suicidal patient says, well, I have cancer, then what are they supposed to do? Refer them to the old Hemlock Society, Compassion and Choices? And the social worker conducting the session actually handed out brochures with the 800 number for Compassion and Choices and explained that that organization would help them find a doctor to prescribe the lethal overdose. One of the people attending the session, one of the hostage negotiators, said this is a little bit weird or bizarre. Here we've been spending the last few hours trying to figure out how to help people not commit suicide, not to kill themselves, and you're telling us that if they have a terminal condition that we're supposed to help them kill themselves by referring them to Compassion and Choices? But that is just another medical end-of-life choice. And while we're talking about end-of-life choices...
About 30 seconds here.
Okay, if people look at the health reform bills that have now been proposed, the one that passed the Senate says very clearly in there that all end-of-life options should be made available to people. So in Washington, Oregon, and Montana, people would be expected to inform patients of all of their end-of-life choices, including assisted suicide.
Rita Marker is director of the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, based in Steubenville, Ohio. We'll post a link to the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide at our website, tonightissuesetc.org. Rita, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
When we come back from this break, Deaconess Pam Nielsen will join us. Every week she joins us on Monday, generally, to teach a Sunday school lesson, helping you prepare for the Sunday school classroom ahead in the coming weekend. And today, a very significant event. I mean, after the events of the last couple weeks that we've been studying, the foretelling of John the Baptist's birth, his nativity, the foretelling of Christ's birth, his nativity, obviously the celebration of the season as we enter even the Epiphany season, extending Christmas. Now the baptism of Jesus. You might think, wow, it's a nice story. It is far deeper, far more important for his saving work than most people suppose. The baptism of Jesus with Deaconess Pam Nielsen on the other side of the break. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned. In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me. Amen." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths in the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly or annual contributor to Issues, etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, check out the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Just look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, Scripture, faith, grace, and Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues Etc. and you.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The way to fight global warming, says the United Nations Population Fund, is to have more abortion and decrease the population, especially in poor developing countries. They say women who have access to abortion have lower fertility rates that contribute to slower growth in greenhouse gas emissions. They say if the world doesn't act now, it could be catastrophic. What's catastrophic is killing millions of unborn babies by abortion. Plus, a growing number of people, including many scientists, don't believe in global warming. One reason may be the temperature of the world is actually going down, not up. Regardless, we can't kill innocent babies and call ourselves green. If so, we'll be stained red with the blood of our children. Killing unborn babies isn't being a good steward of the planet.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.